Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. It's Marvin Rome. Coming to you live. Got another show for you. Got Dr. Rogers coming up. Call a friend. It's African American Empowerment coming up right now. 2 o'clock hour. That's for y'all. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There is no better love than for self and kind. No better love. Welcome to the Empowerment Show. It's African American Empowerment. It is 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment for the African American community. What else are you going to get that at? Right? But it's real people. Here's the deal. It's regular people. You and me. Regular people. Doing the work. Of trying to change the trajectory of our people. And many of us are caught out there because we don't know what needs to be done. But it's brothers, gentlemen, and women like yourself who are willing to tune in to educate yourself, to listen and learn, develop, change, and learn something new. You can't go wrong. It is about growth and development for African Americans. You can call yourself whatever you want to, but if you come down this line, you'll know that at some point we had to go through segregation, mass incarceration. Now I'm going backwards. Black codes. You know, all the things that we went through. Enslavement, right? The occupation of our lands. That's right. All those things and more. But now as we come forward now, as we come forward into the 20th century, 2022 to be exact, what are we going to do now? We know everything. We somewhat know a lot of our history. We still have a lot to learn. But what are we going to do in regards to changing how we engage each other? We're going to have to do a better job of engaging ourselves, creating regulations, right? Value systems that work for us. So how we do that? We'll do it through lots of concepts. There's so many things out there that we could do, but we have to be stable, right? So it's a multi-tier, multi-pronged approach to African-American empowerment wherever you are. The work is to work on yourself first. Like we said, put your mask on and then work on liberating others where you'll be able to do the work of working on yourself first. So within the African-American empowerment concept, the NAAEA, on the national level, we're talking about creating programs and services that motivate, inspire, and empower our people, African-American people, to do the work of working on themselves, right? If you just go to any community that's populated by the majority of African-Americans, particularly that are living either at or below the poverty line, you got some trouble on your hands. Who's going to help our people come through? Who's going to help with the resurrection process? Here's how we can do it. We need peace. We need peace within ourselves, and we need peace within our community. So our concept is the peace concept. How does it work? It's five pillars. Here we go. Politics. We need a political agenda. We do. They're running circles around us, creating laws, changing laws. We have to understand, if we're going to live here, if you want to go, find a place to go, create a new settlement or just integrate in some other country that best fits you and then go. But if you're going to live here, you need some strategies and some tools, right? What are the strategies and the tools that we need to look at? Understanding the politics, the American political system and how it works, and engaging that system that allows for benefits for us to create systems that produce benefits for our people politically. We need money. We need reparations. We need foundations. We need institutions. We need institutions that define our own reality, and nobody's going to give that to us. But if we have a political agenda in our neighborhoods, in our communities, and in our cities, and in our states, and in our towns, a collective national political agenda that we're seeking the same aims wherever we are, it works. Let's move over to economics, to E. We need an economic agenda in the same regard. We got to understand the American concept of capitalism and how to capitalize on capitalism. Not become capitalists or American capitalists, but African-American capitalists that use the system of capitalization to help us build institutions that define our own reality, to help re-educate ourselves, to re-qualify ourselves, so to speak, that we will take another approach. And even in terms of how what we need, right? We need so much, but we need money because you can't do anything without money in this country. You just can't. You can't. So how do we do that, right? How do we build economic platforms in every city and town that we're in, that we make sure that we have the resources that we need to build strong communities, strong schools for our children? Next DA. It's personal now. It's athletics. Health, wellness, fitness, nutrition agenda. What's your health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition agenda? Because we are leading the league in health disparities. We are. You got to look at yourself. You got to push away from the table. You got to have a dietary agenda, a physical agenda, a mental agenda, an emotional agenda, right? That looks at every aspect of your wellness. That means your mental health as well, your physical health and your emotional health. And you need the tools every day to be able to put yourself in a position to live for the next generation. Because many of us are dying because we're sick and we're diseased. Our bodies are in disease states, and we need to do something about that. Let's get to work on that. And lastly, but not least, at least not least, it's culture. We need relevant cultural programs like this one and many, many more to educate our people, to teach our young people, to prepare them for the next generation. And then it's the E, which is the comprehensive piece, that is a 180 degree or 365 degree or 360 degree, however you want to do it. It's every day, all year, a circle, right, that takes us away from where we've been and right back to where we used to be as being the great people that we are, original kings and queens. And that's what it's all about, right? So we have to do the work of working on ourselves, and we have to do that by mastering this system that we've been thrown into. Here's a Stan Macklin moment.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Now, I'm sure somebody out there saying, why do you keep playing that every week? Well, Stan Macklin was my co-host and good friend for many years. And that's one of the clips that reminds me of the work that needs to be done in terms of not trying to get in to fit in. Can we be our authentic selves again? Can we do the work of inspiring each other? And that's all I'm asking you to do, is think about what we can do to make change happen wherever we are. It's the work that needs to be done by us now, right? So we can't stop doing the work, but we can't keep blaming other people as well.
But we must unify. And don't, let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are, original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on earth.
There is nothing wrong with that. Can you make a difference right here on earth while you're living? Can you make a positive change in your community, in your family, within yourself right now, and do the work of getting busy on making that change? It's the only way. We're going to have to do it. I'm telling you, if you continue to wait for other people to do it, you'll be waiting forever, and your life is going to be over. And you may even get another one, and it still won't happen. because it's going to be up to us. And now, it's a Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. Brother George. Oh, yeah. Brother George, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, brother. Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you continuing to honor your friend and colleague, Stan, every week. And I think that that's a great reminder of where we need to continue to move towards.
Thank you, sir.
And so today, I'm going to pick the first principle, umoja, which is unity, to strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, nation, and race. And I honestly believe that is ultimately a most valuable piece at this point in our history as a people, in our struggle. Now today, for the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to read from a book, Powernomics, The National Plan to Empower Black America by Dr. Claude Anderson. And I'm going to read from chapter one, Racism Policies and Inappropriate Behavior. Alex, which road do I take? The Chelsea Cat. Where do you want to go? Alex, I don't know. Chelsea Cat. Then it doesn't matter which road you take. The challenges we face, as the Chelsea Cat said to Alex, who was lost in a wonderland fantasy, it doesn't matter much which road you take if you don't know where you are going. It is time for Black Americans to take a good hard look at where they have come from and where they are going. Are they moving forward or standing still? After centuries of participating in protests, marches, race riots, and demonstrations, and pushing for integration and passage of an endless number of civil rights laws, Black Americans are increasingly sensing that something is wrong. They question whether or not they are on the right road. A comparative analysis of our socioeconomic condition shows that Black Americans have entered the millennium much the same way they entered the previous four centuries, as an impoverished, powerless, and neglected people. Since they have yet to be any programs and public policy specifically offered to eliminate the plight of the Black masses, their future, like their past, looks bleak. Now, it's obviously quite more to the book, and Claude Anderson has also gained some solutions for that dilemma that he just spoke of right there. But the fact of the matter is that just like when I read from the book, From Niggas to God, this same book is trying to jolt your thought process to make us think, what can I do to put ourselves in a better position? Because in this country, it definitely has to be we. One individual becoming a billionaire, Black brothers that and sisters that are already billionaires, and it demonstrates to you that that's not affecting a large majority of our people that are still in poverty. And even some of us live in so-called black middle class, which is something that's different from white middle class. In the same country, middle class meaning two different things. But the fact that even our middle class is like from paycheck to paycheck to, you know, to maintain that so-called middle class lifestyle in this country. So we just have to give things a lot of thought. And that's why I'm glad that Dr. Rogers is here today to talk about things that went on in our past that are very significant to what's going on with us right now. And so at this point, Brother Marvin, back to you unless you have a question. Can you hear me, brother?
Yes, sir. Somebody decided to dial in when you asked the question. Okay,
oh,
somebody's
okay.
Calling me directly. So it, it took me off the screen. Okay, thank you. Real quick, brother, what's the solution?
Yep.
If you could give the world, our people that's listening right now, that one solution, right, what would it be to get that change?
The one solution is it's for us to support each other, to do for self and kind. And you know what, we know what kind is. We know what we look like. We know who we are as a group in this country. And we need to start doing everything we can to support each other, even if we use, you know, start at the basics and each one teach one. If you could teach someone something that's positive and can help them to change their lives, then you should do it, because it's obvious that our, you know, our minds are not in the right place, and it's not by choice. It's by circumstance. And so if any of us, if you can support black business by spending $10 with them a month or whatever, you know, to continue to grow towards thriving business enterprise, which we are very capable of doing that because we help other people do it. You know, for example, like in our communities, most of the convenience stores are now run by the Arabs. And before that, it was the Koreans. And before that, it was the Jews. And so it's a lot of groups of people that have benefited from the black communities except for us. And we could do the same thing. We could just simply start supporting a brother or sister that opens up a convenience store, and which will create a few jobs. And then if another opens up a grocery store, which will create jobs. It's a simple process, but it's kind of difficult for us because of the conditioning that we've had from slavery that told us that we shouldn't support each other. And don't listen to that nigga, that stupid nigga talking, and he just telling you, you know, going to get you in trouble and these different kinds of things. And we have to get away from that kind of thinking, brother. So that's true. My response.
So true, brother. So true. Let's work together to get away from that thinking. Let's bring Dr. Rogers in. You know how we're going to do it. Oh, yeah. Dr. Rogers, bring it.
Bring it.
Yes, sir.
What? Can you hear me, brother?
Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. All right. Let's get it started. We're going to, we got a whole lot of ground to cover. And I'd like for you to just do an introduction first. And then I'll ask you some questions today. And Brother George can jump in where he sees fit. But we want to really analyze the work of Dr. Woodson. And the first question is, before we get started, is we really wanted to look at, we started this series with trying to evaluate Black History Month, right? And then it took us back to Black History Week and then back to Dr. Woodson's work, his epic work that really lives. But I think we've gotten off course, and as you have brought us through all of the different iterations of the growth process with him and the ways in which that scholarship and research has been done and the establishment of a system of doing things and how that was disrupted during the end of segregation into integration, a lot of the model was changed and washed away and watered down to this new version that we have now of just surface education. So I'm asking the question now, what is important? Why is the importance of this study so important to our people at this critical time?
Okay, thank you so much. First of all, again, peace and blessings to all of you and your audience, the listening audience out there. I'm so happy that you are doing this. I am just applaud you over and over again for the vision, the work that you have done to make this program possible. So to answer your question, first of all, this is a massive study. This is not just a sit down and read a book and tell us what you got from the book. That's not that. It's not to do it and then you take a test and ask 10 or 15 questions, and if you get it right, you get 100, and you mean you're okay. That's not what this is. This is a study that embraces everything that is about the African world here in America. It is a foundational study, and I think that's the key that you have to understand. And it's foundation. It's a study that everything that we do, have done, will do, can do, rest on understanding this information that Carter D. Woodson, as well as others, have brought forward, because a lot of them were all dealing with the same thing. What Carter Woodson is simply doing, he's coming in the midst of now there's change, and we are moving toward a modern world, and he's kind of focusing on what needs to happen now in this modern world based on this massive study that we're talking about. And so today I want to talk with you and the audience a little bit about the foundations of that massive study. So the reason, and again, why are we doing it? Because it incorporates everything that is about us.
I like that. I like that.
Answer.
Okay. So let's begin with in the beginning. Right, we're talking about recapturing the African mind, and we want to shift toward African-centered thinking. Tell us a bit about that as it relates to this subject.
Okay, all right. You're right. This is studying, using, referencing who we are as a people, and then studying it from that paradigm, and that's the focus of African-centered study. So when you sit down and you look at publications and documents and books, you're looking at books and documents that are done by our people, not the Euro world, not the Arab world, none of that. You're looking at what we and our ancestors have said about this study and what needs to happen and what it is, and obviously the interpretation. So here's the beginning. This is the most important thing. The institution of chattel slavery in America rests upon a basic foundation. And the basic foundation was that it is an economic struggle to help the Euro world build this colony. And basically what we are looking at from 1600s on is Europe, England. You're looking at England coming over and acquiescing this land and building a world on it and building it to the point that it will last forever. And the only way to do that economically is that you would have to have a labor force that was consistent, proficient, knowledgeable, one that would be able to do it, but at the same time submissive
and one that would be willing to do it and not fight back. And I'm just kind of abbreviating a little bit to that. The African it was not the first choice. The first choice was to use Europeans who had been incarcerated and who were locked up in jails and prisons, and also to use the native people who were here already, which was their land, and to use them and turn them into a labor force that could, you know, clear the land, make it livable, accessible, and provide food, clothing, and shelter for those coming over from England. It didn't work either. So then, after a period of time of understanding the world exploration and the captivity of Africa, because you have to remember that the African capture system began long before 1619. They had begun to take Africans out of Africa, you know, all the way back into the 1400s. And so it was well understood that this was a reliable workforce. First of all, they were gifted. They knew the soil. They knew how to grow, plant, and divide. But this would be the best source to do it. Okay, so we got that point. Now, point two, who's doing it? Well, in order for this exploration of the land here in this colony, it had to be sanctioned by somebody. Somebody had to agree based upon the European political and economic system was, in order to get this done, it had to be sanctioned by outsiders because there was no capitalism prior to that. So they had to agree on how to do that. And at that point, the only one that could agree to that was the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church had to sanction the exploration of this new world. And why is that? Why the Catholic Church? Well, the Catholic Church was the dominant religion of Europe. The Reformation that was taking Africa into another realm of things had not gotten strong enough yet. They were in the process. Because as you remember, Martin Luther's thesis to the Catholic Church was still kind of new. So it had to be based on the foundation of religion. Religion had to okay the exploration of the new world. Now, so if you're going to use religion, then obviously you are having principles that you have to look at in terms of the religious ideology. Catholicism is based on the development of Christianity. Catholicism is based on the fact of monotheism, the one God concept. And then obviously the one God has to be European or European looking or look like Europeans to do that. So the Catholic Church then is the one that launches out and beginning to do this. Now they're going to get criticized for getting involved in this economic venture of bringing people into captivity and trying to make them work in the system that they wanted to create, which was slavery. Slavery was not new. Slavery had been going on in the world, particularly in Europe, for a long time. It was the Romans did it. The Greeks did it. They all brought people in captivity. And remember, the Catholic Church is Roman. So that Catholic system of captivity is going to be used to transfer to the new world. So then in order to do that, you've got to come to the conclusion, well, who is it that we're going to bring in captivity? In order to justify that in a religious system that says do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and that all men are created equal, in order to sort of negate that we haven't violated those rules, they were going to have to negate the people that they brought. And so that the people that were brought over, the Africans, had to be ruled that they were not human, that these were not the same people that were of the Roman Empire, that were of the Greek Empire, and all those other European cultures. These were people less than human. And we should go back and you look at all of the material that was written That is what was said, that these people were not human. Okay, so if that's the case, how do you know they're not human? The God-given ideology, the God-given material that was given to man to read when Moses went up on that mountain and they wrote into that tablet said that they're not human. And so what then is that passage? What then is the documentation from that material that you're talking about is going to justify that? And one of the first things that they did is they went to the first book. They went to the book of Genesis. And they looked at this passage called the curse of Ham. And it doesn't say that. And at that point, not to take up time to go into that story, we know what that was and the interpretation of what that was. Ham was cursed by Noah. Noah being the original builder of early civilization. God had destroyed the world before that, and now Noah was going to bring into existence a new world. And the whole story how it went, that he looked at his son and he cursed him, and here's where it differs. According to the theory, is that he cursed him to blackness. Others say that he cursed him to servitude. And the interpretation between those two in terms of the Catholic scholars and all of that depended on the geographic and the political structure at that time. So now we've got the foundation. The people that they're bringing to the new world have been sanctioned by the Bible as not human. These were animals. These are less than human people. And so as a result of that, they published a book that would be used to study all of this when they brought it, called the Slaveholder's Bible. Now, this was a later development, but it was just simply going right in with the already ideology that had been developed. Now, for anybody that wants to read some of this, Dr. Bridges mentioned last week in his study about a man named Winthrop Jordan. He wrote a book called White Over Black. There's another book that followed right after that, and these were modern books now. These were books written trying to explain that interpretation. Then there was a second book that was written really around the 60s by a psychiatrist whose name was Joel Covell, and he wrote a book about the psychology of white racism, and he was looking at the history of that book. But even predating that, there were other writings in that time frame that scholars were writing about the inferiority of the African person that was brought to the New World. So then if that's the case, this is the foundation for the people that are being brought to the New World, that these people are not human. These people are of another branch of the human tree and the human family. And that has persisted on into the modern era. This ideology and philosophy has persisted continuously. How do we know? There are books that are written to explain it. There's a book that was written by a theologian out of St. Louis, Missouri. He wrote a book called The Negro, a Beast. And he headed a Bible college. And that was the textbook for the students at the Bible college. And in the book, he said that on the morning of creation, there were only three things in the Garden of Eden. There was Adam, there was Eve, and there was a snake. And in the book, he described that the Negro could not have come from Adam. He could not have come from Eve because Adam and Eve were Caucasians. That he had to come from the black snake in the Garden of Eden. And he goes on in that book to describe and justify and dictate all of that theory. Now, listen to this. The book was written in the 1900s. Amazon was still selling that book a couple of years back. I don't know if they still have it. But for a while, that book was still being sold, called The Negro, a Beast. And he talked about pictures in there depicting the Africans and the way that they perceived it. So this is what Carter Woodson, this is what Martin Delaney, this is what Edward Wilmot Blyton, this is what George Washington Williams was trying to tell us. This is what Marcus Garvey was trying to tell us, that we had to change, that we had to educate and re-educate our people, because for a long time we had been pushed out there as less than human. So when you sit and you listen to Mitch McConnell, you listen to Graham from South Carolina, you listen to Donald Trump, and listen at the language, they're speaking the language of the slaveholder's Bible. Now, the slaveholder's Bible was actually a document. It was printed around early 1800s, by 1803, 1805. And what it was designed to do, it was designed to make the African, if you read it, because he's being told this is the word of God. God wrote this now. And God wrote this and gave it to Moses and brought him down here to give it to the people. That if this is what God said, then this has got to be true. And so it was designed to highlight only the parts of the Bible that spoke of submissiveness of those who were in captivity. And this was particularly important to those who had plantations in the West Indies, because the West Indies plantations were different. They were basically, they were a lot more like Africa, and it was easy to rebel in the West Indian islands. That's why the Jamaicans were so critical, the Maroons, because they were able to fight the British and escape into the mountains, and the British couldn't capture them. So they needed to tame the African of the West Indies. And so what they did is they created this Bible. They went into the New Testament, dealt with the Paulinian letters a lot. A lot of the Paulinian letters, Thessalonians and Philemon, the book of Philemon, where Paul encounters a captive who had run away. And he said to him, he said, look, don't run away from your master. Go back and talk to it. Go back and work with it and tell him, you know, some things. And, you know, those of you who are biblical scholars, you know what the book of Philemon says to that captive runaway. They highlighted those stories. They didn't highlight a lot of the Old Testament. They did highlight Joseph's captivity. Because if you remember one of the things about Joseph, you know, he was a little submissive, because he felt being submissive was a reward to God. So they used that in the slaveholder's Bible as obviously justification. But most of it comes out of the came out of the New Testament. And the other thing, too, is that more than likely when Nat Turner preaching to his folk, he was attempting to try to bring in the story of Moses, I'm sorry, the story of children of Egypt and their escape from Egypt. I'm sorry, children of Judaism, I get them mixed up here, from escape from Egypt. He tried to do that. But he also, in order for the slave master to agree to it, he had to use some of that language. The other thing is, a lot of those churches that were being started in black communities, on those plantations, on those black plantations, a lot of them were given that Bible as a source to teach. And if they taught from that Bible, they could continue to progress and operate. Because the first black church was called an invisible institution, and it didn't meet in a place. It met out by the lake, out by the creek and the river. And they would hold church service out there. Because at that point they could be private, and they knew that they would not be detected from doing that. So in sort of summing up that whole foundational piece, the reason that we are having to study Carter Woodson, the reason that you would study Marcus Garvey, the reason that you would even study Du Bois in his language, is because the foundation that was set for African people that would come to the New World was that they were not human. and it was preached and highlighted in everything that he did. And Woodson said that. He said every area of the Negro is pushed into him that he's less than human. So you got to work with that first before you talk about any kind of other progress. You got to get into that. So the miseducation of the Negro is not just talking about he can't read or he couldn't write. No, that wasn't. It's deeper than that. It's deeper than just reading and writing. It's deeper about knowing for himself. And like you said, in every institution of life, it has been pushed into the Negro that he was inferior and he was less than. That's in chapter one, where he talks about the seed of the prophet. And one of the things that Woodson brought to our attention in his book, he says, and to validate a lot of that, if you think about those who have really done anything for our people, the most successful ones are not the ones that went and got formal educations and got masters and PhDs. That's not who that is. Most of them are grassroots people. Booker T. Washington didn't have no PhD, even though he, you know, ran a major institution teaching black people how to use the skills, which they already knew how to use, but he just wanted to highlight on that into that area. And a lot of the others, they weren't trained in the classics. They didn't. That's why Du Bois had a problem with Booker T, because he said you need to know Shakespeare and you need to know who the Greek gods are. Yeah, they don't need that. Is what he said, is that you need to be able to understand how to provide food, clothing, and shelter for you. And so what he did is went on and outlined all the different areas. He said even right down to science and mathematics. He said that's not a thing for you to figure you're an expert. You need to use science and mathematics for science so you can learn how to grow food so that you and your family can eat. You know, that's what you use science for. And that's what George Washington Carver did. George Washington Carver, I'm going to teach you how to grow tomatoes, sweet potatoes, peanuts, stuff that you can't get. And I'm going to teach you how to grow it in areas where it's simply tough. You can't grow. Back down there in Tuskegee and some of the Alabama, all of the cotton had sucked all of the nutrients out of the soil. So the people, the farmers weren't able to grow anything. Everything they tried to grow was that. So George Washington Carver got in that little truck he had and went out through Tuskegee showing the people how to get around that, you know, how to make that soil rich using stuff like compost, dead leaves, worms, dead food, and put it into the ground and fertilize that soil so that you can get tomatoes and cabbage and corn. And you can do that. That's what he did. That's the science he did. And then mathematics. What do you need mathematics? You need mathematics because you need to be able to work out a budget to feed your family. Well, this is how much money I get. This is how much money I spend, you know, because a lot of them were sharecroppers at that time. So what Woodson is saying, the mathematics you need to learn is the mathematics that's practical. Because he talked about somewhere in his book about Mississippi, for instance. He said, you go out there to Mississippi and you look at those families and the way they're living. They need to know how to budget their money so they can buy shoes or pay their rent and do whatever is necessary to do in order to survive. And then he criticized in the same chapter about where the problem is. He talked about the preachers. He jumped the black church, but he didn't jump them in terms of not liking God. I know that Dr. Bridges said he had called some of his Apex students, had them to listen. So, brothers and sisters, if y'all are listening, I'm not knocking God right now. I'm knocking the logic of what was being used to teach people to do things and sort of how it has an economic basement to it. That's what we are talking about. I used to teach at a seminary, and I used to ask the men, do you understand what the theology concept is and what it means? He's saying that was used in a lot of cases for people to be miseducated to the point that there was only a certain amount of people could make money. And so, and it's not, again, not to knock the black preacher, because that's not what he was doing. A lot of times he was trying to provide that spiritual base. But in the source of the spiritual base, you got to teach him how to eat and do for himself. That is a part of the miseducation concept. If along that you're dealing with the spirituality of things, and you're not teaching them about growing their own food and having successful families and doing that, then the theology is a waste of time because they're not going to make it. So that's one of the areas. And then the other one is the school of business and business schools. You know, they're not going to business schools. A lot of them going to business schools to learn how to work at, to manipulate the stock market. Man, come on. What do black folks need to deal with the stock market right now and the economics of that? They need to know how to, if they grow some cabbage, they can get them a little truck or a wagon and go out on the side of the corner and sell some cabbage or sell some bananas or apples or sell peanuts, just like you used to do years ago down south. You see what the brothers and sisters get in these wagons with a horse going, and they got a basket full of fruit, coin and black eyed peas and all kind of stuff they're selling out of that truck. That's the economics. And if you don't do that, then you're miseducating our people, you know. And so that is the foundation of why you need to study Carter Woodson, because he's instructing us and he's looking at those areas that, where nobody else was doing that. Nobody else was telling us about how to do for yourself in that way, to be very clear. And what he said that was happening is those that were going to these colleges and getting their degrees, you know, were not using. For instance, the slaveholder's Bible, the original copy of it came out of Fisk University. And it's rightfully right that Fisk would have grabbed it, because Fisk is in Tennessee, in Nashville, and that's big slaveholding stuff there. They were able to get a copy of this so that they could study it and learn how to be that. The other thing that, and I'm going to stop, Brother Marvin, at that point, and then maybe get another question or so, or some comments from your audience, because like I said, there are a group of theology students that are listening to you today that might very well want to hone in on that foundation. But this is the foundational piece. And then the other part of that is that the African was taught that he had to be, according to Carter Woodson, a good Negro. You got to be okay with the white people. And if you're not a good Negro and you're intimate and you're misbehaving and you're not in your, staying in your place, then you've been told that you'll never be successful and that you'll never be able to do anything because you don't know how to stay in your place. And so when he talked about the fact that the educated black is a detriment to his race as opposed to that, because he's talking about the ideology of just wanting to be a good Negro and what that whole concept of educated means. And I think that's something we have to deal with in our own community as well. What does it mean to be educated? Does it mean that you got 6 degrees beyond your normal stuff? Is that educated? And very clearly, Woodson said, no, that is not being educated. Woodson had all the certifications. He had the master's, PhD, but he used it in his own self for his people. He created an institution to help them study about who they are in order to survive. It just wasn't to be able to be a history person and go on one of them game shows and win a whole lot of prizes. He was being taught our people how to look at what their ancestors did, and then that way you can do that. And then you will be able to liberate your own people. Brother Marvin, every day at the beginning of his program, he goes through this analogy about good health and all of that. And sometimes there are many of you that probably hear it and take it to heart. There's some people, what they got to do with anything? They ain't going to put no food on my table. Yeah, well, I beg the difference. That it will put food on your table to do that. Man, I remember that in the early years of the 60s and the 50s, they used to have shop classes at high school. The high school would teach you brick mason, plumbing, electricity. Man, I wish I would have took those classes. And I remember that we used to laugh at people that took those classes and call them old country boys because these classes didn't reflect that you knew the Greek theology and you knew Greek mythology and you knew the history of the great British Empire, you know, and that you understood Hegel and you understood Karl Marx. You know, it's like one brother wrote a book. He said, Karl Marx. He said, how many, and I'm going to use this expression because this is the name of the book. He said, how many niggas did Karl Marx know? He know none. And Karl Marx was writing to justify a lot of cases of slavery. So he wrote the Communist Manifesto in 1860. So you see, that's what we have to do, Brother Marvin. We've got to look at this study, and that's why we got to look at it, because it explains foundational philosophy about the African. The African that was being brought to America, who they said was an animal. There was one plantation owner out of Jamaica. His name was Edward Long. And I hope that you all are writing this down and go check it out. I'm not just talking from the hip. This is valid information. His name was Edward Long. He wrote a book called The History of Jamaica. And he said that he needed to provide a way that he can bring more of the Africans to the world. So he thought about, once he saw, he had gone to Europe and saw some traveling circus, and he saw this orangutan. And he said the orangutan looked just like some of the Africans on his plantation. And he said he wondered if he could breed the women with the orangutan and be able to create Negroes that he could put to work. And he said that he was going to try it. He was going to try and get some orangutans, bring them together, and breed them with the African women. And he wrote that in this book called The History of Jamaica. Check it out. It's still for sale. Now, what has happened in a lot of these is they, you know, go on and edit them and pick some of that stuff out. Thomas Jefferson wrote a book called Notes of Virginia, where he talked about the animalistic nature of the African. He said the African definitely is not human. He said he may be close to it, but he ain't really human. And so all of that goes into this, and they had to create something called a Bible or some kind of publication to make people believe it and understand it, including the African himself. I did, and I'm going to close with this. I had gone to a lecture in Black History one time here in Milwaukee. And it was a church, small country church. I knew the pastor, though, and he had asked me to come and to do a presentation for Black History Month. And so the woman got up, a member of the church who was going to introduce me and everything. She said, well, I'm so glad that we got Dr. Rogers here today. She said, we want to talk a little bit about our history. We need to know about our history because you know we are cursed people. You know we were cursed in the Bible. And so we got to learn how to come out of that curse. We all got a curse on us. And it is hurting our families. It's hurting everybody. We are cursed. Now, this was 1985. This happened. So that logic, that ideology is still floating around in the community of ideas about our people. They do it with things like the bell curve. They did it. They do it when you talk about education. Mitch McConnell does it when he talks about critical race theory. Lindsey Graham, when he attacked Justice Jackson, he attacked her on the grounds that you ain't human. And I don't care how you interpret it, that's what I interpret. If you go back in there and listen to the language and some of the questions that they were asking and the way that they were asking, that's what they were doing. You're not human to sit on the Supreme Court. And even when Clarence Thomas went to sit on the Supreme Court, they made him the same thing. They didn't deal with his brain. They dealt with his penis. They highlighted his penis, not his brain. So what we heard for the first 2 weeks of his, you know, his hearing, for the Supreme Court was what he did with his penis to Anita Hill, not about how smart he was and what historical documents he had written. They wrote about his unhumanist activity and behavior. That's less than human. So you don't do that with people that, you know, have a position. They did it to Du Bois. And W.B. Du Bois was attempting to try to get some of his papers published in the American Academy of Sciences, which was one of the highest academic institutions in the Euro world. They challenged his ability to write. They said he couldn't write in a way that would be good enough to put his work on display in their archives. So with that, Brother George, I'm going to back up, Brother Marvin, and if you ask any questions, but that's the foundation that we've got to set, and we got to keep doing it.
Dr. Rogers, powerful stuff, and that is, again, why we're doing this. This is education. I'm sure for many of us, this is brand spanking new. The Slaveholder's Bible, right? Dr. Bruce brought it out, but we're going to look into that as well. But I'm sure many of us haven't heard about that before. Really quickly, before we go to the lines, I want to ask one question. So we're looking at Dr. Woodson around the 1930s or so, which is, we're getting close to 100 years. So what I want to do is I want to move back. I want you to take the people as we go through this series back into the mind of Woodson, right? So we can be there right with him, right? Talking about what he felt, what he thought, and his purpose for creating this system now that leads us to Negro History Week and then into Black History Month, right? Great accomplishment, right? Mm-hmm. He also talked in there about missing the mark, right, and how we missed the mark. And before we go to the calls, I just want you to touch on how he saw us missing the mark. Would you do that for me, Dr. Rogers?
Okay, yes. Okay, you know, one of the things that you can do sometimes, you can assess a person by looking at the things that they do, not just what they say. My dad used to always tell me all the time, he said, what you do speaks so loud, I can't hear what you say. And I think that's what we need to look at in terms of Woodson. Working down in those coal mines of West Virginia was no coincidence to him building the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. Now you got to remember that he's down into the womb of the earth, down into the belly of the earth, digging coal, trying to make a living to feed himself. And I'm sure he's asking himself as he goes along, why am I doing this? Why do I need to do this? And then you have to also look at the fact that he recognized that a lot of his brothers that were working down there with him were not able to do, even though they were working the coal mine, they weren't able to really do for themselves. So as Dr. Bridges explained to you one time in his presentation, he used to read the newspaper to them. And that's what the Association for the Study of African Life, Carter Woodson, was reading the newspaper to black people. That's what he was doing. So I think that's one of the things, I think, out of the gut of him that you would have to look at. Now, in terms of real quickly his missing the mark, I think he deals there by starting with the what was happening after the Civil War, and particularly looking at Reconstruction. Reconstruction was a system that really has to be assessed and analyzed by us. And one of the best books to do that is a book by the great Carter E. Woodson, I'm sorry, not Carter, with W.B. Du Bois, called Black Reconstruction. And we could use that as a study guide. Because, first of all, one of the things that, you know, and I've always argued this and I always say this, that whole concept of freemen and abolitionists, the abolitionists were some of the most racist people on the planet. They didn't want to free no black folks, but they call themselves abolitionists for economic reasons. So he's saying in this, we missed the mark, is that we're jumping on board with the Freedom Bureau and all of that, and you know, and how, and Abraham Lincoln, and you know, and all of that post period of history. We missed the mark because we should have been putting our attention on something else, such as building houses for us, you know, educating ourselves, going down into what he called the Black Belt, and beginning to change history there and teaching our kids from things like that, teaching them that a cabbage or some corn or some potatoes you can grow, and it's a healthy food to feed you, not just pig stuff. You know, he's down there eating pig and all that mess, and he was bringing it from the days of the plantation. The plantation was still with us. We did most of our healing on those years from the earth. They used to go down, and I remember my grandmother and them doing it in North Carolina. They used to go out into the yard over there by certain trees and dig up bugs. And you take the bugs and we'll put them in a sack and tie them around a baby's neck. And the bugs would draw the fever out of the baby when the baby was teething. And that didn't come from anything but just our natural instinct to survive out of Africa. And so that's what he's saying about missing the mark. We were trying to run to be in these white schools and doing all the stuff that white folks, we wanted to be like white people. A lot of our people wanted to do that. We wanted to straighten our hair. And as hard as this is to say, Madam C.J. Walker and Murray McLeod Bethune kind of had it wrong a little bit. Because they felt that we needed to look more white, like particularly our women, in order to be successful. So they straightening combs and putting that crap in their hair and doing all the things we did. And please forgive me if anybody's a Murray McLeod Bethune fan, but that's Bethune-Cookman College was teaching them to do stuff like that. That's not what they needed. We missed the mark on that one. They didn't need that. They needed to learn how to do for themselves. Learn how to create a budget. Learn how to shop efficiently. Learn how to grow what you can grow. And if you got to buy something, buy that. Learning how to keep, you know, your family intact and passing that kind of thing on to your kids. And then if you're going to go to church and be involved in it, these missionary teachers weren't the key here. You know, your interpretation of scripture and the ideology of that has to be carefully thought out. And it has to be carefully worked in a way that's practical. And you can do that with religion. You can teach practicality with religion. I'm sure there's enough preachers on the line that can tell you that. That it's okay to talk about Paul, you know, and some of those other things, but you got to understand Paul a little bit deeper. You got to understand the burning bush and what that meant. So that's how we missed the ball, according to Woodson. It goes in a little bit deeper, but just for the sake of time, that's how I think this can begin to look at it.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. Powerful, man. I love it. I love it. All right. So he talked about the foundation, food, focus, and family. You start there, you got a leg up. All right, we're going to the lines. Dr. Rogers, you ready?
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Brother George, are you ready? For our new listeners, this is how we do it here. We're going to call the last four of your telephone number if you're dialed in on the line, and we're going to ask you to tell us where you're from and if you have any questions or comments for Dr. Rogers. We're going to start with 1378. You're on live. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Rogers? 1378. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I came in a little late, so I apologize. So I was just listening, and I'm just glad there's people out there that's giving us information. Don't have any specific questions because I came in too late, but just good to know that you're putting it out there, and hopefully people can
hear it
and take something with it, you know, do something with it, expel some of this, extract some of it, and take something with it, you know.
All right, thank you. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Detroit.
Detroit.
A lot of times, you know, people.
Thank you.
Yeah, Motor City. That's right. A lot of times, people, you know, they hear this stuff and it's, oh, you know, that's that's old school, or, you know, that's this, it's a new day and time or whatever, but this stuff is still relevant. So we just have to take this information, apply it to the days, what's going on today in today's society. So like I said, sorry I came late, but I'm sure you guys are putting it down, and we up in Detroit, we appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, sir. Spread the word of African-American empowerment in Detroit. We need Detroit. We need Detroit. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. No problem. Take it in.
All right. All right. 6337, it's your turn. You have a question or comment. Where are you calling from?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. I'm calling from Durham, North Carolina. And
welcome
to the
show.
I have a question. Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I'm calling from Durham, North Carolina. This is Terrence. And I just wanted to first of all thank Dr. Bridges for sharing the link. And I wanted to thank you all for putting together another great presentation.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Keep listening. Spread the word about African-American empowerment. We got to do it.
Yes, sir.
Nobody else could do it. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. We're going
day.
Over
yes,
65.
Bye.
Thank you. 6511. 6511. Welcome to the show. You're on live. Do you have a question or comment? Where are you calling from?
I'm just listening. Doing some work right now. Just listening. I have no comment right now until next week.
All right.
Okay. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
Right.
I love
all
it,
right.
Dr. Rogers. They're listening.
All right. That's good.
We
got to
keep
good.
Spreading the word. Spread mm-hmm. the word of African-American empowerment. We're coming on strong. All right. 9944. 9944. You're next. You have a question or comment for Dr. Rogers? All right. We'll move on to 9067. 9067, you're on live with Dr. Rogers. Do you have a question or comment? 9067. All right.
Yes,
4541.
Max way off.
Hey, how are you?
Doing fine. Doing fine. I don't have all my documentation, but I'm going to want to share something that people don't know. This Carroll guy, the Negro Obese, was a philosopher that I taught at Apex School of Theology. And some of the students out there today, he put that 1,000-page book out, and an African-American preacher by the name of T.M. Chambers debated him in Dallas, Texas. And he used Acts, the 8th chapter, verses 27 through 40, to refute this thing that the African-American was a beast. Must keep in mind now, he was, Carroll was a slave owner, privileged, and believed that the black population was illiterate and not people yet, and they were not even citizens. But Dr. T.M. Chambers, with those verses, you go read it for yourself, Acts 8, 27 and 30, he dismissed all of that information. I'm trying to remember without having all of this before me, but I think verse 27 and 28, he talks about he was an Ethiopian eunuch and rose and beheld a man of Ethiopia of great authority under Candace, queen of Ethiopia, and had charge of all of her treasures and had come to Jerusalem for to worship and returned sitting in his chariot, reading Isaiah the prophet. In those verses, as he debated Carroll, number one, person on the chariot was not an ape, according to scripture, but a man. The Bible teaches us that in Africa, we were human beings in verse 22. Number two,
amen.
This person on the chariot was not a thief, because he was in charge over all of the queen's treasure in verse 27. Number three, this man on the chariot was not a slave because he was a man of great authority. Number four, this man on the chariot was not living in a jungle. He was from the great country of Ethiopia and lived in the capital of Mero. Number five, this man was not poor, a poor man, because in the text say he was sitting on his chariot. He wasn't leasing from Toyota. It was his chariot. He was not buying this chariot. It was his. He was not borrowing this chariot, but it was his. And Craig Keener, a white theologian friend of mine in the IVP background commentary of the New Testament, states that in the New Testament, most of the people walked. The more well-to-do rode animals, but only the most well-to-do had chariots. People were occasionally known to read while sitting on expensive chariots. Usually, one attendant was doing the driving. This Ethiopian was not uneducated because he was reading Hebrew, something many of us could not read now. This Ethiopian was not illiterate either because nobody was reading for him. He was reading.
Right.
Number eight, this Ethiopian eunuch was not living in a country in a jungle like Tarzan, but rather he was living under the same roof of Candace, the queen. We talk about Obama being the first black president in the United States. But in Ethiopia, Candace was a term, was a, not her name, but a title of all of Ethiopia. And so you're talking about the scripture now. Number nine, this text teaches us that Africa is not just ruled by men, but women could also rule. Candace, queen of the country of Ethiopia. Number 10 of 12, the term teacher in Africa is not just in a jungle. He had to have roles if he was on a chariot and riding and reading, according to Craig Keener, who got his degree from Duke, but he was one who had this book that's very important. He's not trying to do theology. He's doing sociology, history, and culture of the text, and I recommend that book to your audience. This text teaches us that he was not a heathen who did not know God. The Eurocentric people are trying to tell us that we were Johnny come lately. And I can go on, but number one, too, is when you look at scripture in the ninth chapter and the 13th chapter of Acts, you see that the Bible said it was the Africans who told the Greeks about Jesus. And in the 13th chapter of Acts, when we were first called Christian, it was in Antioch. And there was Simon the Cyrene, Simon the Niger. And I used to teach my kids, I tell them to read what it said. They say Simon the Negro. I said, no, it has one G, not nigger, but Simon the Niger. They were inside the church. They laid hands on the Apostle Paul. And I have a piece that I wish I had called We Were There. From Genesis to Revelation, we are there. It's just like the Europeans just bought us out. And this thing about the Egyptians and the Ethiopians, this Bible dictionary called Zondervan, when I first started pastoring, I went out and got it. You know, you had an old Hamite theory and a new Hamite theory by right folks. Crackers, I must call it. The old theory say we did not come from Ham, because if we came from Ham and you went to the ninth chapter of Genesis, you'll see when Ham, Japheth, and Mesorah, that Ham was from the great Cushites, who actually from Nimrod. So they X'd us out. But then in the 50s, they came back and said, oh, you're not from Egypt. That's the new theory. So every time the white folks do, they try. It's not the Bible that's the problem, my brothers and sisters. It's us letting other folks interpret it and not reading for yourself. I've spent my life on this, and I don't want to take up all the time, but I have so much I can say. And that Kara got blowed out of the water in Dallas, Texas, with just that eighth chapter of Acts, proving that he was a man riding on his own chariot and reading. So they had to have roads. Because how could he ride in a chariot from Jerusalem until, you know, to Jerusalem from Ethiopia?
Right.
I'll stop.
Dr. Maxwell, thank you. That's African-American empowerment. That's African empowerment right there. Thank you, sir. We're going to have to get you back on here. We're going to talk to Dr. Bruce to get you in. All right. Thank you, sir. Dr. Rogers, do you have anything you want to add?
That was very good that Dr. Maxwell presented. I hope, though, that he didn't interpret that the reason that I mentioned that material was because I was saying that that was the prevailing knowledge. Of course, yes, that was a rebuttal. We, you know, African people knew that, and that we knew that it wasn't. But I think the point for me bringing it up was the mere fact that it was used as a weapon to diminish African people. Now, we knew that it wasn't true. We had scholars that could quote that it wasn't true. We had the history that wasn't true. But when William Clay, who was the senator from Kentucky, and they were arguing the passage of the Fugitive Slave Act, when he went to the Archbishop of the Episcopal Church and asked him to provide documentation that the Negro was an animal, then what he did and argued before the Congress was research that spoke to the Negro a beast. So when the U.S. Congressman heard the presentation from William Clay and the Fugitive Slave Act did pass, they argued John Carroll's book. John Carroll owned the Bible College, as you know. And that Bible College teaches people who were teaching the Bible. So I agree. No doubt about it, Pastor Maxwell. You're clearly right. There was plenty of documentation to dispel that, but that's not the way it was used in the terms of that. So when people like Woodson and all of those came along, they had to address it from how it had been used to diminish us. And it was being used on different fronts of life, like it still is today. It's still being used that way today. Even though you've got that documentation, and there are others, you've got John Henry Clark, you got John Jackson, you got Chancellor Williams, you got all these folks that know this history is wrong. That's not how Mitch McConnell and Leslie Graham would use it. And what we've got to do is dispel it to them, because they're not going to listen to that. And so if we're trying to access seats of power, we've got to go at the merits of the argument. And so that's kind of what I would say.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. Hey, powerful show. All right. Let's go over to 5347. 5347, you're next on the Empowerment Hour. Do you have a question or comment?
Man, I'm just enjoying this, brothers. I'm down here in New Bern, North Carolina. Keep on going. I don't want to stop the show.
All right. Welcome to the show. Thank you, brother. It's all about our empowerment. All right. That's going over to 4740. 4740, the flow keep going. You got a question or comment? 4740. All right. Maybe they're just listening. Dr. Rogers, we want to shout out the Apex School of Theology. If you want to call in, 845-277-9250. Let me try that again. 4740, you ready? 4740, you there? All right. Let's go down to 8502. 8502, you're live. You're next. You're on. 8502, do you have a good evening?
Good evening. This
Welcome to the show.
Herbert White in Durham, North Carolina. I'm so grateful to be able to listen to Dr. Rogers today and the information that he's imparting to us. He's basically what he's telling us is that everything white people told us was a lie, and Carter G. Woodson and people like him had to untell that lie.
Right.
And we're still untelling it today.
Amen.
Still untelling it
Amen.
Today. Because the roots of that lie go so deep,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to get to.
That's great.
Thank
True,
you.
Brother Herbert. Thank you for calling. We're going to work toward getting toward the truth one day, one person at a time. All right. 7487. 7487. Question or comment for Dr. Rogers? 7487. All right. Let's go down to 0946. 0946. You're live. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Rogers?
Yes. I have a comment. I really have enjoyed the show. And I think that a lot of the information that was presented today One of the challenges that I see that we have in our community is just a healthy dose of imagination and curiosity, because without that, when you hear things that you've never heard before, then a lot of times people will just dismiss it. And so there was a lot of information that was given today that I hope there's people on the line that have never heard it when I was preaching to the choir. But I believe if we could find ways to encourage or strengthen or motivate people to be more curious why things are the way that they are, I think that then when we get this new information, we have a place to put it in and a place to, you know, ruminate it around in our mind. So I appreciate a platform that's giving this information, and I pray that minds that are listening are open to what is being taught. Thank you.
Thank you, sister. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. All right. Dr. Rogers, you got a comment on that?
Yeah, and I think she's clearly right. And one of the ways to do it is to kind of do it the way Reverend Maxwell did it a few minutes ago, come up with alternative resources, obviously addressing it, and then also looking at the original resources that were used to promote these concepts and ideas. Because you have to also think about, you know, we did not own publishing companies. We did not have book printers to come out with the counter information. In some cases, we did do them, like, for instance, when when Carter Woodson created the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, he also created a publishing company called Associated Publishing. So he realized that some of the stuff that he was about to reveal, he was going to have to use that and publish it himself, because wasn't nobody going to publish that, you know, kind of thing. So you got to have that intellectual community of resources. And like she said, you know, when you bring these ideas, you have to direct people to resources to look at them. David Walker's appeal. David Walker, if I'm not mistaken, he worked for a printer. But you know that no white publishing company would have published that book and what he was saying. You know, it had to be done in a way that we could get it out to the public and get it out where we would publish our own resources. And that's what we need. And we need that now, because we don't own any more black publishing companies. Only a few, Black Classic Press out of, where is it? I don't know. I don't remember where it is now. But Black Classic Press is one. Ebony Jet used to be publishing. We used to have, but they're not there anymore to do that. So we still need a publishing company. We can publish books like that, publish stuff like Dr. Maxwell was reading, so people can get access to that. You know, because you go online, those books cost $400-$500. You know, so you have to be able to have access.
All right. If we don't do it, who will? If we don't do
right.
it, who will? It's our empowerment. It's for us. All right, 5972. You're next. Online.
Yes, sir, my brother.
Got a question.
My brothers. Dr. Rogers, excellent lecture. Dr. Rogers. And I want to thank all of my Apex School of Theology students. I don't know, some may not have made comments, but I hope they were listening, because as Dr. Rogers said, they can take this information when they become pastors or deacons in the church or whatever. Take this information that I'm texting you to listen to this program, and not just today, but every Saturday at 2 o'clock. Take this information and use it in your churches and try to uplift our people. And I want to thank Dr. Maxwell, too, for that lecture that he gave. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to get him back, Brother Marvin. And,
that's
all I can say. We're going to get him back to do a program. But about the slave Bible, too, I'd like to mention, and I know we bowed out, but Dr. Rogers said there were only 3 copies of the slave Bible that's to be found, they say, in the world today, and those 2 are in, believe it or not, in the United Kingdom, which was one of the biggest in England, one of the biggest slaveholders on this earth, have 2 copies in their library, like they've stolen everything else in the world and put it in that library, and also one at Fisk University, as Dr. Rogers said, and one place that that slave Bible really was used, and this is going out to my friend who called in from Antigua today, Brother Dean Payne, who called in today from Antigua, they really used that slave Bible in the Caribbean to keep the black folk in the Caribbean islands down in slavery. So I'm not going to do another lecture, but I really appreciate this, and it's an excellent program, Brother Marvin. And again, my hat's off to Dr. Rogers and everybody today. Excellent program.
Thank you,
right. Thank you, sir. Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Rogers. Great job. And Dr. Maxwell as well. Hey, way to squeeze that one in, right? We're getting all the juice out today. All right, we got Dr. Bruce coming up. So many doctors. Dr. Bruce is coming up next week. Tell a friend, right? If you're on the line, if you're listening online, come back next week and do it. Dr. Rogers, final comments from you. Great show today. We got to come back and dig in some more.
Right. I think what we're saying is that we really have to develop study groups like this. This is a study group. This is an excellent study group where we talk frankly our researches and our findings. We can even disagree sometimes on topics. That's all right. That's fine, too. But at least come together, as the sister said, because sometimes a lot of this, all it does is provoke curiosity, and you don't follow through on it. So we want to follow through, because we need to teach this to our kids, you know, because technically, I'm going to be honest, them kids don't want to hear this. They don't want to hear all that, you know, kind of thing. They're trying to watch the basketball tournament. And some of those kinds of things, you know, and I mean, that's just the way it is, you know. But we need to redirect that energy so that they can better understand why they need to learn about themselves. What is that going to be? And you don't need to wait till they get in prison and you have to go to the prison and talk to them about doing for yourself. You need to catch them now. And that's what I see this program being a valuable asset to do that.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. We'll see you soon. And Brother George, final comments from you.
Man, it's been such an enlightening show, even for me, brother. You know, recapping the African Mind series, this is a golden, you know, example of what we need to do to recapture the African mind. And so it's back to you, brother. I really, really appreciated all that information and knowledge that we got today.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. And again, your segment, Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa, was right spot on point today. Join us next week. We got Dr. Bruce coming up. And if you think it was hot and on fire today, wait till next week. The brother's going to bring something special. So tune in next week. It's all about our empowerment. Who else is going to do it? I keep saying the same thing because nobody else is going to do it. It's people like you and me and Dr. Maxwell and Dr. Rogers and Dr. Bruce and Brother George and you and all of us working together to make a change. Knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. Don't push away from it. Sometimes the light is bright and it blinds you, but once you get used to the light, oh, don't it feel good? So we're going to keep on working on motivating and empowering us. It's for us. It's for our community. It's for our people. Nobody can tell us we're human beings. We're the original people, the original kings and queens. The brothers say that we're riding around on chariots or mobile apparatus back then, reading. So if you're reading, then somebody had to write it. That's before people had shoes and houses with windows and all of that, like Dr. Clark would say. But let's continue to work this week. Find something to do in your community that will make a difference. If you don't do anything but tutor, mentor, and then find a study group. We got one for men on every other Wednesday. Join us if you want to get to that. Call me or contact Dr. Bruce or Dr. Brother George, and we can get you in, or Dr. Rogers if you want to join the men's study group. It's been 100 for Dr. Rogers today. You get an A today for this class, sir, and it's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment for us African Americans. We're going to keep doing it. There's no other way. We are the best. We are the greatest, and we will continue to strive to become the best people that we were born to be, created by the Creator to create. Let's continue to do that because we are. We don't have to prove it to anybody. We're human beings. We just are. Till next week. Talk to you soon, brothers and sisters. Peace and blessings.
yeah.